This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Which get confused, get ignored, get forgotten. And that's particularly disturbing today, that there is a large tribute of people who are coming back to Torah and getting involved in Torah, and in many cases getting involved with the basics missing. And it's no less dangerous than trying to build a skyscraper without laying down foundations. And one finds that things which on which Torah has been built for thousands of years, for generations and generations, one finds all of a sudden those things, Torah, somehow being built without them today, and it becomes very disturbing and very troubling and very dangerous. And really, I'm busy on a series of shiurim now. It'll probably be another 3 or 4 shiurim on interrelated subjects. Last week we spoke about the style of learning. You know, certain things are up for debate at the moment in the Torah world, and they have no business to be up for debate. There are things which can be debated, and there are things which can't be debated. And even those things which can be debated, there are people who have the right to debate them, and the people who don't have the right to debate them. As in every area of knowledge, you can't have laymen and ignoramuses debating about the rights and wrongs of cigarette smoking as far as its relationship with cancer is concerned. Well, I'm rats in talking about it. One has to get the Chachomim to debate that issue out. So even that which can be debated in Torah has to be debated by those who have a right to debate it. One of the things was the things which we discussed last week. This style of learning and that style of learning, there are certain things which are beyond debate. Style of learning are slight variations which depend on the particular personality of the individual who's involved in the learning. But in terms of basics of style of learning, there's nothing to debate. There's a way that the Tanoim learned, and there's a way the Amiroim learned, and there's a way the Rishonim learned, and there's a way the Achronim learned, and it all goes one after the other. It all follows one after the other. And the differences in style are individual differences depending on the particular talents and leanings of an individual. But within a framework, there's nothing to debate about that. There are certain things which are basic. One of the basics which also are beginning to fall by the way is the basic that Torah can't be picked up. Torah has to be, one has to be mekabel Torah. So okay, over starts. Moshe kibel Torah misinai. Moshe received the Torah from Sinai. Doesn't say God gave the Torah to Moshe. The kibel, which is important, he received it. The Messiah Yeshua and handed on that which he received. No new Torah. He handed over what he received. He handed over to Yeshua, and Yeshua to the Zakenim, and so on. And so the Rambam starts off his sefer also tracing from Moshe each generation right through to Ravashi. Generation by generation, exactly who received Torah from who. We'll talk about that probably next week more. But this concept, the Torah has to be received, Torah can't be picked up, is something which in principle is falling by the way. With the sort of explosion of knowledge, there's the tendency to think that it's just available, that anybody can pick it up from the street or from some book or something. And consequently, the whole relationship, that whole chain of Kabbalah Sator, how one receives and how one passes on, how one learns and how one teaches, is getting all confused. How a teacher relates to a Talmud, how a Talmud relates to a teacher, is getting all confused. And these are some of the things that over the next couple of weeks we'll dwell on. Pirkei Avos makes a sweeping statement in the fourth parak. It's a statement that one can understand. Yehi chvod talmidcha chovev alecha kesheloch. You should regard the honor of your Talmud as carefully as you regard your own honor. Uchvod chaveicha, and the covet of your colleague and friend, kemoira raboch. That you should give him the kind of honor that you would expect to reserve only for your rabbein. Umoira raboch kemoira shomayim. and the fear of your Rebbe, the fear of your teacher, should be the kind of fear which you would normally consider fitting only for the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. That is the Meir Rabbah Kemor Shemayim. What is it? It's a sweeping statement. There are other places in Shatz where the same concept is expressed and learnt out in different ways. It's very sweeping. It's one of the things that one just reads through, you know, on Shabbos afternoon when one says Pirkei Avos, Meir Rabbah Kemor Shemayim, one just goes through it. Not the kind of thing one can just read over that quickly. And I've decided to go into that carefully, and as I said, this particular thing will take us at least 2 weeks. And tonight I'm not going to tell you one thing of my own, because it's a subject that I'm just too afraid to touch. It's too critical, and as I went into it, the things I saw were just almost beyond belief. So I'm simply going to repeat to you mila b'mila, word for word, as I heard it from my Rebbe, Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz, and as it is in fact printed in a collection of some of his shmuels. And there's not one word that I'm going to tell you tonight which is my own. That's, we'll develop the idea further maybe next week, but tonight I'm just going to tell you the yesod which he develops and show you how he develops it, and on that we'll build later. There's another Pirkei Avos which is even more peculiar in a sense, which is in the second perek. Hevi mischamen keneged oiron shel chachomim. Find warmth by the fire of chachomim, by the light of chachomim. In other words, get close to them and warm yourself by their light. Become infected by them. Because the relationship between a Rebbe and a Talmud is not just one of a professor and his students, where the one gives knowledge to the other. It's a relationship where a certain degree of closeness has to develop in order for the Torah to be passed from one to the other. However, on the other hand, very strange words. Be careful of their coals that you don't get burnt. There's such a thing as coming close to a Talmud Chacham, but still retaining a degree of care that you don't get burnt. Shemeshichoson, listen to this, Shemeshichoson Meshichas Shuol, their bite is like the bite of a fox. The Akitzoson Akitzas Akrov, and their sting is the sting of a scorpion, not a bee. They sting like scorpions, not like bees. The Chol Divrayim Kegach Aleishon, all the Ulechishoson Lechishas Sarov, and their poison is like the poison of a snake. We're talking about Talmidei Chacham, it's a funny thing. V'chol divrayim kigach aleish, and all their words are like coals of fire. In the Nefesh HaChayim, the B'chaim V'lozhna, in the third, beginning of the third Shah, explains this image of the words of Chachomim being like coals. That a coal, when you look at it, there's not very much fire, there's just a dim glow. But when you start blowing it and stoking it up a little bit, and you start moving it around, it starts getting hotter and hotter, and all of a sudden flames start coming. So that's the first thing, that the words of Chachamim, when you look at them, there's a nice little glow there, but one doesn't exactly see what it's going on about. One isn't impressed at first sight with the drama of their statements. Only upon tending the coal and working on it and bellowing it and stoking it does it begin to flame, and does one begin to realize what there really lies inside it. And then there can come a stage where you get too close and you get burnt. One has to, there's this funny kind of a balance. What I'm bringing this one for is just to show you that there's just funny things that are being said here. The degree of Moira is the ultimate. The degree of awe in which a Rebbe has to be held is the absolute ultimate. And a word of caution that on the one hand one needs to get close to them, and on the other hand, beware. How beware? How beware does one have to be? That we'll see from a few Gemaras. This Gemara is based on our Seder today. Gemara in Erevin, Daf Samach Gimel Amud Aleph. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Lo Yemesu Bnei Aharon Ad Shehoru Halocha Bifnei Moshe Rabbo. The sons of Aharon died because they paskened a halocha in front of their Rebbe Moshe. They learned Torah from Moshe. And there was a question that they worked out for themselves, and they gave the answer without referring it to Moshe, and for that they died. That in itself, Rashi brings it in the parasha, that's the reason that they died, and that in itself is an amazing concept, but the Gemara goes on in an even more amazing way. The Talmid Echad Hoyel Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Eliezer, the author of this very statement, had a certain Talmid Shehore Halocha Befonav, who paskin the Halocha in front of him. And in Halocha one goes into what Befonav means. Does it mean in his lifetime, or does it mean in his geographical area, or does it mean physically in front of him? Be that as it may, paskening a Halocha where really it should be referred to the Rebbe. So Rabbi Eliezer had a certain Talmid, and he heard that this Talmid had paskened the Halocha. He had made a legal decision, a halachic decision, without referring it to Rabbi Eliezer. Omer Rabbi Eliezer li imasholim ishto. So Rabbi Eliezer said to imasholim, his wife, to me ani im yotzi zeh shunosu, I will be amazed if this person lives until the end of the year. He says about his own Talmid, I'll be amazed if he lives until the end of the year. The lo yotzi shunosu, and he didn't live till the end of the year. Amr Allah, so his wife said to him, no biyata, you're a prophet. How could you have known that he was going to die before the end of the year? I am no prophet, and I'm not the son of a prophet. This is what I have been taught. Anybody who paskens a halocha in front of his Rebbe is guilty is deserving of death. Not just is deserving of death, but is chayiv misa. He gets the death sentence. Not by a beis din. We don't put such a man to death, obviously. But it's chayiv misa b'dei shamayim, says Rashi. God puts him to death. I knew that. So I saw that he passed the halacha in front of me. So I knew it's chayiv misa, so he'll die. A very steep sentence for a seemingly minor offense. We're not even talking about a person who paskens wrong. And the paskens wrong, those are other things. We're talking about a person who paskens right. He might even paskin exactly the way his Rebbe would paskin, exactly the same way. But for paskining in front of his Rebbe, for that there's a chiyuv misa, there's a death sentence. The worst. What's the death sentence for? Obviously, for being poga b'chvod rabbi. He's somehow attacking the authority of his Rebbe. That can only be the only thing for which the death sentence is really given to him. If that's the case, it's very strange that Rabbi Eliezer shouldn't have been moichel. Rabbi Eliezer should have called the Talmud into his office and said, you know, you've been very naughty. That's not the kind of thing you do, and don't ever let me see you do it again. This time I'm moichel. I forgive you this time. Who wants to see that Talmud die? Who wants to see that Talmud suffer? And he knew he was going to die. It's not as if he didn't know. Rabbi Eliezer knew for that Musa. So why doesn't he just call him in and give him what for? Give him all the Musa he wants to. Make him feel like a real nobody for doing it and make quite sure that he'll never do it again. And finish Bimaycha. But Rabbi Eliezer doesn't. Rabbi Eliezer says instead, he knows that he's going to die within the year and he leaves it at that and he dies. That's the one Gemara. The next Gemara. In the first Mishnah of the sixth Perek of Psochim, there's some interesting dialogue between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva about a complicated halachic matter. Rabbi Eliezer makes a statement, he gives a halacha. Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Eliezer is asked on that halacha and wants to answer the question he's asked, and Rabbi Akiva asks a stupid question which in fact makes a mockery of what Rabbi Eliezer was trying to say, in a sense. Tanya, we learn in the Brisa this in Psochim Daf Samach Tes Amud Aleph, Omalo Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer said Akiva, and he calls him Akiva, not Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is junior to Rabbi Eliezer. He says, Rabbi Eliezer, Akiva, B'shchita he'shavtani, you asked me a joking question from the principles of shchita, of slaughtering. B'shchita tehem mitasa, you're going to die that way, you're going to die by slaughtering. And Rabbi Akiva goes, he says, please excuse me, but this is what we learned, and he leaves it at that. The Gemara asks further on, the Gemara says, Rabbi Eliezer had learnt this din, it's akele, and he forgot it. The Rabbi Akiva lid kure, gemare. And Rabbi Akiva merely came to remind Rabbi Eliezer of what he had learned. In other words, Rabbi Eliezer, the teacher, was saying something which Rabbi Akiva picked up was inconsistent with what he had said earlier. So Rabbi Akiva asked him a joking question from Shechita, which he was hoping Rabbi Eliezer would remember as a result of that question that which he had said years before, and having remembered it would withdraw from what he had just said, and that would solve the whole argument. Ask the Gemara, the name I behead you. Listen, let Rabbi Akiva say clearly, why must he talk in riddles? Why doesn't he just say, excuse me, Rabbi Eliezer, but a couple of years ago you taught us the following, and that's inconsistent with what you're saying now. Answers the Gemara, Sova lav oirech ara. Rabbi Akiva held that wouldn't be derech eretz. To come to Rabbi Akiva and say what you're saying now is inconsistent. To come to Rabbi Eliezer and say what you're saying now is inconsistent with a din which you taught us a long time ago, that wouldn't be derech eretz. So instead he says a joking statement, exactly on the very point which Rabbi Eliezer had taught them years before, in the hope that Rabbi Eliezer would then remember and would himself withdraw and say, oh, you know, I've just remembered something, what I just told you is not correct, and fix it all up and it would have been finished. Rabbi Akiva is so sensitive to Rabbi Eliezer that he goes out of his way to almost make a fool of himself asking a stupid question of Rabbi Eliezer so that Rabbi Eliezer should pick up that he said something wrong, rather than that Chas v'Sholom Rabbi Akiva should actually point out to him that he said something wrong. And nevertheless Rabbi Eliezer takes offense and says, Akiva b'shchita tehim ito, so he's going to die with shchita, you're going to be slaughtered, Rabbi Akiva. And you all know how Rabbi Akiva landed up being killed. And that's where it comes from. That was for what had happened. It's also amazing. That means that Rabbi Eliezer realized that Rabbi Akiva was going to die a most horrible death. But it would be a terrible chilul Hashem that he would die such a death. That Rabbi Akiva, his dear Talmid, somebody whose greatness was recognized by everybody of the generation, everybody knew who Rabbi Akiva was. And certainly Rabbi Eliezer, one of the Rabbeim of Rabbi Akiva, knew how great and outstanding this Talmid was. Rabbi Akiva was naughty, you hold, he shouldn't have done that. So again, in front of the whole class, tell him he's naughty. Tell him it shouldn't have been, that's not the way you talked. Tell him he deserves to die of shchita. But don't actually give him that, make that statement and not withdraw from it. So all you have to do is say, look, Rabbi Akiva, please don't ever do that again. And okay, this time I'll be moichel you, this time I'll forgive you. No forgiveness. So we had the Gemara in Erevin with Rabbi Eliezer, and we've got it again here. But Rabbi Eliezer doesn't forgive Rabbi Akiva. And we have a third one, which is the most amazing of all. Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish were brothers-in-law. Reish Lakish used to be a gangster, used to be a member of the Mafia. Not just a member of the Mafia, but he was the godfather himself. And it was in fact Rabbi Reish Lakish who saw the beauty of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was an extremely handsome man. And he was despoiled, he was very impressed with that. And he in fact jumped over the river to come and meet Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was impressed with Reish Lakish's power, with his energy. And they made a deal that Rabbi Yochanan said, look, I've got a sister who's even more beautiful than I am. You come and learn Torah, you become a Talmid Chacham, you can marry my sister. So he did. Reish Lakish did. To get that, it was worthwhile. The Gemara tells that afterwards he could no longer jump over rivers. The Mesiras Nefesh with which he learnt actually weakened him physically, but he became the great Reish Lakish, and Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish developed a relationship which was extremely close. But one day they were having an argument. The argument developed because they were discussing the halachas of from what point knives and swords and things like this, this is the Gemara in Metzia Daf Pei Daled, become roi lekabel tumah. From what time, again, a complicated halachic inyan they were going into, from what time these utensils become sufficiently complete in their process of manufacture to actually be called a kli, to be called a utensil which now can be mekabel tumah. So Rabbi Yochanan says, Mish'as gemar melachton. So the Gemara says, Mish'as gemar melachton, from the time that their manufacture is complete. U'me'emasai gemar melachton. Asks the Gemara, and when is their manufacture complete? So on this, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish had two views. Rabbi Yochanan Omar Mishi Yitzarfim Bekivshan. Rabbi Yochanan says once they've been purified in the furnace, once they come out of the furnace, that's when they're ready. Reish Lakish Omar Mishi Yitzachtachim B'mayim. Reish Lakish said no, once you've dipped them and polished them in water and they're really hard and finished, that's when they fit. Amaleh, Rabbi Yochanan said to Reish Lakish, listor belistyusa yoda. I bow to your superior knowledge. You are the expert in matters of knives and daggers and swords. Robbers are the people you should know, and in that matter, I bow to your superior knowledge. At which obviously Reish Lakish got angry. Amaleh, and he said to Rabbi Yochanan, umay ahantli. What do you think you've done for me? Don't talk to me so condescendingly, like I used to just be an old robber. What do you think you've done for me exactly? Hotsum Rebbe Koruli, Hacha Rebbe Koruli. They call me Rabbi here, they call me Rebbe, I have honor and everything, it's very nice, but they used to call me Rebbe there as well, I was the godfather himself. So it's no difference, yeah, I'm a Rebbe of Talmidei Chachamim, I was a Rebbe of robbers, but a Rebbe I've always been, a master at my work that I've always been. Amaleh, Rabbi Yochanan takes deep offense at that, and he says, "Ahanoilach the akrevinach tachas kanfei hashchina." What I brought you is not calling you Rebbe or honor or anything. I brought you under the wings of the Shechina. I brought you under God's wing. That's what I did for you, and don't ever forget it. Cholash died to Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan in fact went into depression. That Reish Lakish could have said such a thing to him, hurt him no end. Cholash Reish Lakish. At that, Reish Lakish got ill. Atoi achte kobachi. So Reish Lakish's sister came to cry to Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish's wife came to cry to Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish's wife is Rabbi Yochanan's sister. Amrulay, she said to him, Atei bishvil bini. All right, you don't want to pray for his recovery because you're angry with him. That's your business. But we have a son. For the sake of my son, pray for his recovery. She knew that if Rabbi Yochanan would pray, he would be recovered. On my law, he said to her, Ozbo yitzemech anir achaye. He quotes to her a pasuk from Yirmiyahu, don't worry about your orphans, I will look after them, God says, for the orphan, don't worry. Atei bishvil almanusi, she said, but I'm going to be a widow if he dies, just do it for my sake, I'm your sister after all. Amalai, so she quotes so the rest of the pasuk v'almanusayich olai tiftechu, and your widows should trust in me, don't worry, your widows will also be alright. So Rabbi Yochanan says to his sister, don't worry about the child, don't worry about you, God will look after you. That's got nothing to do with my argument with Reish Lakish. Nach nafshei de Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish passed away. Reish Lakish passed away. V'hover kam mitzdaye Rabbi Yochanan basvetuve. So you would think Rabbi Yochanan would say, oh, served him right, shouldn't have started with me now. He went into terrible tzar. He suffered terribly, Rabbi Yochanan. Amu Rabbonin, man lezer lezved l'daite. So the Rabbonin, the rabbi, said to each other, who should we send to try and comfort poor Rabbi Yochanan? Nezer Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas, the mechadidin shmeitze. Let's say Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas is the sharpest of us all. He has a sharp mind which Rabbi Yochanan will enjoy. And they'll start talking and learning, and he'll take his mind off the mourning of his brother-in-law Reish Lakish. Ozal, so Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas went, Yosef came and he sat before Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan, every time Rabbi Yochanan said something, he thought of a new idea, a creative thought, which he expressed to his new chavrusa, to Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas. And whatever he said, Rabbi Elazar ben Pedas brought him a proof. Everything you said, whatever new idea you said, yeah, you're quite right, there's a proof to you from here, there's a proof to you from there. Omar asked Kival Lakisha. He says, are you trying to take the place of Reish Lakish? Do you think you can compare to Reish Lakish? By Lakisha ki abu amina milta, when Reish Lakish was my chavrusa and I used to say something, hove makshili esrin va'arba kushyosa. He used to ask me 24 questions. Umefrekinole, and I used to answer him esrin va'arba piruki, 24 answers. Umemeila rab chashmaisa, and as a result of that, our learning developed, it enriched itself, it became sharper, it expanded. That I'm just telling the Messiah. And whatever I say, you bring me proof. I don't need proof. Atuli Adana the Shapi Kamina. Do you think I don't know that what I'm saying is good and right? No one can say something and without the proofs you know it's right. And what you want then is not proofs that it's right. What you want is all the things that are against what you're saying to see whether you can answer it and whether you can establish it correctly. I don't need you to tell me that I'm right. I know I'm right. I need Reish Lakish to ask me those powerful questions. On everything I used to say, he used to ask me 24 kashas.
And I had to answer him 24 good answers. You can imagine that Reish Lakish wouldn't settle for anything but the clearest and best and ultimate of answers. And that way our learning used to develop, not by coming and giving me answers and proofs. At that Reish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan realized that he has no hope of replacing Reish Lakish. If this is the best they can send him, that's just no good. And he went around, he tore his clothes, v'kobochi, and he cried, v'omah, heichad balakish, heichad balakish, and he used to walk around shouting, where are you, Reish Lakish, where are you, Reish Lakish? V'hokotzavech ad deshaf da'aseh. And he went around shouting and screaming until he actually went mad. Rabbi Yochanan finally went off his mind. He went insane. Bo Rabbonin, Rachmi Alei V'Nach Nafshi. The Rabbonin prayed to the Ribbono Shel Olam for him and he died. Right? That's what they prayed for, that he should die. Ask Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz, why didn't they pray that he should recover from his insanity? Answer Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz, they knew that was impossible. For Rabbi Yochanan to have lost Reish Lakish and to have remained sane was not possible. That's how close their relationship was. Don't forget, Rabbi Yochanan is the same man who lost his 10 children. All of his 10 sons he lost. And he didn't go mad. And he used to walk around with a tiny little bone from his last child. And when he used to go and be Menachem Ovel, when somebody lost a close one, he used to go there with this little bone and he used to say, this is from my 10th child that died. And I'm still carrying on and I'm normal and that life must carry on. That's how he used to comfort people. That same Rabbi Yochanan, who could take such tragedy of his own 10 sons dying, couldn't take the loss of Reish Lakish. He was closer to Reish Lakish than he was to his 10 children, to all of them together. That's the degree of closeness. Now go and understand. So when Reish Lakish offends him, and Reish Lakish gets ill, and he knows Reish Lakish is going to die, because he says to his sister, don't worry, you'll be a widow, but it'll be alright. And don't worry about your son, you'll be an orphan, but it'll be alright. And it's within his hands to pray to the Ribbono Shel Olam and to heal Reish Lakish. And he knows how close he's been to Reish Lakish. And he doesn't do it. He lets him die. And he knows he's going to go mad. He knows there's no way he can survive without Reish Lakish. And still Reish Lakish has to die. It's not understood. Because it says, beware of Chachomim, because they can burn you and sting you and bite you. Okay, burn and sting and bite, but ad kedei kach, to this extent. Furthermore, there's a Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Mem Tes, where the Gemara says that kol shenenash chaveru al yodo, anybody whose friend suffers is punished because of him. Ein machnisim oyse b'mechitzosu shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Such a man doesn't come near the Ribbono Shel Olam, no matter how great he is. One day after 120 years, he doesn't come close to God. If somebody has been punished because of you, so he doesn't come close to God. So what, all these people here, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yochanan, do they want these people to be punished because of them when it was within their power to forgive them? And surely that would have been the end of the story. And still they leave it without forgiveness? Unbelievable. And it's here that Rabbi Chaim Shmuel Levitz develops his yesod, which is terribly important. And he says that if the issue would have been simply pegia bichvoid rabbi, if it's just that he damaged the honor of his rebbe, firstly it would be difficult to understand why there should be such a terrible sentence for such a thing. It's a bad thing to do, and it's insensitive, and it's not nice. But death, and these terrible deaths. Secondly, if that's what it was, if it was just the rebbe's kovod which was hurt, then the rebbe would simply forgive the person who killed him, that would be the end of it. There seems to be something here which either makes it unwise for the Rebbe to forgive the person, the offender, no matter how much he might want to do it, or that it wouldn't help forgiving him. Therefore, says Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz, the pegiah is much more serious. And that is, a pegiah bichvoid rabbi has the effect of diminishing the effectiveness of the Rav in his kehillah. That's what it does. It's not just that you've offended the Rav. If it's just between you and the Rav, so the Rav forgives you, and that's the end of the story. You don't have to die for that. It's bad. It's a naughty thing to do. It's bad to offend anybody. It's bad to hurt anybody. It's considered like murder, and so one has to be very careful with people's pride and with people's honor. But ad kedei kach, then it's misah, that there's a death sentence for it. That's not because you offended him. That's because you diminished his effectiveness in the community. Chaim Shmuel Levitt says that without the effectiveness of Gedolim in Klal Yisrael and of Rabbonim in their communities and of teachers amongst their Talmidim, without their effectiveness, you can forget about the whole nation. Everything ceases, everything stops. The whole progress of the nation depends on its ability to be guided by its Rabbonim. Now, for a Rav to guide the Kehillah in the direction the Kehillah wants to go is not very difficult. That you don't need anything for. That's something which happens normally. The difficulty comes when a Rav has to guide the Kehillah in a direction it doesn't want to go. That's where you have the problem. And that's where you come to the point where without this element of the covet of the Rav, well, you know, you agree, you don't agree, but anyway, that's what he wants, so that's what you do. If that element is missing, it can't work. And you find that the Rav is obstructed in his efforts of passing on the practice of his knowledge. Just to pass on his knowledge is easy. But to pass on the practice of his knowledge, to pass on the directiveness of his knowledge, he's obstructed in that, and when he's obstructed in that, you can close shop. There is nothing at all. There's an amazing Gemara in Chagiga that you dalad. Kiatu Rav Dimi Omar, when Rav Dimi came, he said, Shmeinas Esrei Kololus Kilul Yeshayahu's Yisrael. Yeshayahu gave 18 curses to Am Yisrael. And he wasn't satisfied. He didn't feel that he'd done the job properly. Ad she'omar lahem amikra hazeh, until he gave them this pasuk. Yirhovu anar bezokin v'anikle benichbat. That a young man will take over from an old man, and a dishonorable person from an honorable person. They will be on the top. The small people will be on the top. Until Yeshayahu had said that, he wasn't satisfied. And the Gemara goes through the 18 clawless that he did give them. And they're terrible. He basically says there'll be nobody among Israel who will be able to learn. There'll be nobody who knows anything. There'll be nobody who will be able to give good and honest advice. Goes through 18 terrible things of complete desolation, intellectual and spiritual desolation. And still he wasn't satisfied. And the Chaim says in the name of his Rebbe that what that means is he was trying to describe the ultimate of national degeneration. And he felt he hadn't got to it until this passage, which does describe the ultimate of the degeneration. When the little one doesn't listen to the big one, when the little ones are taking over from the big ones, that's when you have the ultimate. A few words in the Mesillas Yesharim, in the 11th parak of the Mesillas Yesharim, which is compulsory reading for anybody who takes the Yiddishkeit seriously, a couple of words where he talks about people who are just beginning, their eyes are beginning to become open in Yiddishkeit. They're just beginning to learn a couple of Gemaras, they've learned a few Masechtos here and there, a little bit of Mishnayos, a bit of Halacha, and all of a sudden they can't see the difference between themselves and Talmidei Chachamim, and they're all of a sudden passing opinions and giving views and guiding people and answering questions. All of a sudden, big Talmidei Chachamim. Says the Mesillas Yesharim, that's part of this. It's the total breakup and degeneracy of a community of Klal Yisrael altogether when this happens. Then Yeshayahu said, now I've described to them how bad it will really be. When little people with only a little bit of knowledge, people who knew in it who just starting, when they start making decisions, when they start passing opinions, and when they start taking the place of the experienced people, then you know that you can close shop, the nation is finished. It's the ultimate. Says Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitt, that's what we're talking about here in all these Gemaras. If it was the covet of the Rav which had been hurt, the Rav would forgive, finish. No Rav wants to see a Talmid punished in this kind of way. No human being wants to see another human being punished in this kind of way. With a terrible Yisurim, with a terrible suffering, a death of Rabbi Akiva. For what? It's the thing we cry about on Yom Kippur. It's put into the Yom Kippur davening to make us cry, just to read about it thousands of years later. So put in there just to make us miserable. Can you imagine what it was really like? The bizoyan, the tremendous disgrace to him, to his Talmidim, to Klal Yisrael. The pain, the suffering, the hurt that the prince of Klal Yisrael should be torn up in such a despicable way by such ignoble and bottom of the barrel people. Why? All the schuyos of Rabbi Akiva, look what he did. He was nearly appointed the Nosi, just because of, he wasn't quite up to it in terms of background, so he wasn't appointed the Nosi. But in terms of knowledge and stature, he was the greatest. Greater than Rabbi Loza ben Azariah, as we learned. the greatest in his generation. Rabbi Akiva, the same one that when Moshe Rabbeinu was learning Torah with the Ribbono Shel Olam, he wasn't only learning that Torah, he was going ahead, he was learning all the Torah that was ever going to be learnt. And when Moshe Rabbeinu went through all the generations, he went through Yeshua and the Zakenim and the Nevi'im, and he went right through all the Shoftim and everything. And finally he came to Rabbi Akiva, and Moshe Rabbeinu in advance listened to the Torah of Rabbi Akiva. Moshe turns around to God, he says, "What do you need me for? Why are you giving the Torah through me? There's a man much greater than I." Says Moshe Rabbeinu of Rabbi Akiva. We don't know who we're dealing with when we talk of the Rabbi Akiva. The greatness of the man. A man who after 12 years of learning doesn't even come in to say hello to his wife because he's afraid of the interruption. That moment will take his mind off. And goes back for another 12 years because he overheard her saying that she wouldn't mind if he did that. 24 years without saying hello to anybody, because believe me, if he said hello to anybody, he would have said hello to his wife also. If he didn't say hello to his wife because he thought it would be a hefsek, that means that during those 12 years he never made such a hefsek. He didn't stop in his learning even for such a brief moment, and he didn't for the next 12 years either. 24 years of learning without for one moment stopping to say good morning to somebody, because that would be a distraction. That's Rabbi Akiva, and all that couldn't save him from the statement made by Rabbi Eliezer, that although you were sensitive and you asked in a roundabout way so that nobody else would notice what you were saying, only I, but yet you were making fun of me. Because of that you're going to die that horrible death. And Rabbi Eliezer doesn't forgive. It's unbelievable. Because it's a terrible thing, once the effectiveness of a Rav or of a teacher or of a Godel be Israel has been diminished, there's nothing you can do to repair it. Whatever you'll do will not repair it. It's the most terrible situation. Because, so let's imagine X makes fun of Rabbi Y, and then X comes along and he says, "No, well, I didn't mean it, everybody, don't take it seriously." But he's already done it. That doesn't re-establish Rabbi Y to where he was. That simply means that X now continues in a sense of his lording it over and saying, "Look, you can take him seriously." Also, there's no way you can repair it once you've effectively diminished his ability to function. There's only one way it can be repaired, and that is it has to be seen that the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't tolerate it. That's the only way it can be repaired, and therefore it wouldn't help to be Meicha, because to forgive, you can only forgive something which is done against you. You can't forgive something which is done against somebody else. And if somebody insults a Rav, he can forgive him for the insult. That he can forgive. But that's not what he's getting death for. He's not getting death for the insult. He's getting death for reducing his effectiveness. That's an offense against the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's an offense against the very roots and the very basic structure of Torah, because Torah cannot be passed on unless there is that authority relationship. The moment that has been shaken, the whole passing on of Torah is destroyed. So the offense is not against the human being. The offense is against Klal Yisrael. The offense is against Torah. The offense is against the Ribbono Shel Olam. And for that there can't be Mechila. This we see in fact from the Rashi on the Parsha.
Says Rashi, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, the same Rabbi Eliezer, it's Rabbi Eliezer Lishitosa, the two Gemaras we've had are Rabbi Eliezer, and now the Rashi is Rabbi Eliezer. Lo Mosu b'nei Aaron el Alidei Shehoiru Alocha b'fnei Moshe. Something he must have felt very, very sensitive about. He must have felt it in effect. Well, it is because we have two cases.
I don't think it's referring to the same case where Rabbi Eliezer said that I'll be surprised if that man sees his year out. I'm pretty sure that wasn't talking about Rabbi Akiva. In fact, the Gemara further on gives the name of the Talmud, and it's not Rabbi Akiva. So he had the one case where he told his wife, "I don't think that this man will see the end of his days, will see the end of the year." He had another case with Rabbi Akiva. So he knows what it is. And it's he who says, "Lo Mesu b'nei Aaron el Alidei Shehoiru Halacha b'fnei Moshe," the sons of Aaron died only because they were Moire Halacha. There was no other reason for them to die. They were Gedolim and Tzadikim. They were great, great people, as Rabbi Akiva was a great man. But all that greatness couldn't save them from that issue of being Moire Halacha b'fnei Rabban. And further on, Rashi brings, look how great they were, because Moshe still says to Aaron, Amalei Moshe l'Aaron, again Rashi brings in the next pasuk, Aaron Achi, Aaron, my brother, is trying to comfort Aaron, who's just lost his two sons. I knew that the Mishkan was going to be sanctified, it was going to be introduced into its functioning. We're talking now about the very first days of the Beis HaMikdash, of the Mishkan. I knew that it was going to be introduced into its functioning by people who were very close to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And I thought it could only be you or me. One of us was going to do the job. Who else would it be? Now I see Shem Gedoli Mimenu Yimimcha. I see that your two sons were greater than you and me. This is Moshe Rabbeinu talking to his brother Aaron, that the two sons were greater even than them, and if their greatness couldn't save them against the issue of being Moshe Halacha Bifnei Rabbim. And then Rashi says a little bit further on, Kishakodesh Baruch Hu Eseh Din B'Tzadikim, when the Ribbono Shel Olam punishes tzadikim, that even though they're tzadikim because of something they did wrong, they need to be dealt with. Misyore umisale umiskalis. God becomes more feared, he becomes more exalted, and he becomes more praised. People begin to understand what's going on. They begin to see what's involved. In Cain ba'elu, if that's the case with such great tzaddikim as these two men, the sons of Aaron, that God's name is raised and sanctified and glorified because they were punished where they needed to be punished, kol shchein b'rishoyim, how much more so when undeserving people are punished. We're not talking about punishing in a way where nobody understands why they're being punished. We're talking about the particular punishment for this issue of being Moshe Halacha Bifnei Rabbim, where the punishment has to be so severe that there can be no question about it. And it has to come soon. It has to be quick. It has to be connected. Otherwise, again, people won't understand. The whole purpose of the punishment is not so much because they did wrong. Their wrongdoing is not the critical part. It's the wrong they caused which is so severe. You know, we said only a few weeks ago that one never understands the degree to which little actions can have big consequences. I gave you the example where you just say good morning nicely to a person, and as a result of that you can have all sorts of fantastic discoveries in the world just because of the chain effect, as we discussed a few weeks ago. One never knows, one little mice, one little action, just a little nice thing, and one hits off another, and so it goes on, and a lot of people can be affected by it. The reverse is also true. One thing done wrong, particularly when it's done wrong in a public situation, but even if it's not, can have a chain effect which makes it so big, and so its results are just so extensive that there's no way you can afterwards reverse it, and afterwards you can change it. It just goes completely out of control. Perhaps that's one of the major lessons of the age in which we're living, with the nuclear threat over our heads. Not the pshat in the nuclear threat, it's one little explosion. But once that explosion is gone, there's nothing you can do about it anymore. There's no way you can stop the destruction, and it's just a chain effect, one after the other. It spreads and it spreads and it spreads, it goes and it goes. One bit of destruction causing the next bit of destruction, and there's no way whatever it can be stopped. There's nothing you can do. You've just got to wait until it's finished and then try and pick up the pieces. And here we're talking about the same kind of thing. There are actions that can be done, particularly when they're done in communal areas, particularly when they're done in the areas of a Rav or a teacher or a Godel B'Yisrael's influence among the people, which is the backbone of the survival of the people of Israel. Where there's just nothing you can do, you've just got to wait for the chain reaction to stop ultimately, if it ever dies, and then pick up the pieces. There's no way you can reverse it. And for that there has to be Misa. Only one way, and that is to take the person who caused it, and it must be clear to everybody who's affected that the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't tolerate. Anything else the Ribbono Shel Olam will take tshuva and he'll accept, and you can be moichel, all sorts of things, but that the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't tolerate. And it's the most frightening thing. It's something that I've seen with my Rabbein, and it's something I've seen in my short experience. It's up and hack, it's so quick you can't imagine it. The connection between the action and the punishment is so, just from a time point of view, there can be no question. It's within moments, within days maximum. And it's hard, it's harsh. Yisurim, suffering, unnecessary suffering, inexplicable suffering. And suffering which doesn't stop, chas v'shalom. Doesn't stop no matter whether the Rav is moichel or not, it just goes on and on and on and on until the person has got the point. And until the tzibur has got the point. The most terrible, terrible thing. and one sees it and one reads about it over and over again. It wasn't only in their day, something that happened throughout history, throughout Jewish history.
If that's the case with Pegiya Bichvod Rabbi, if that's the way that God views the destruction of a Rov's effectiveness in his Kehillah, one must also look at the other side of the coin. What about a person who contributes to the Rov's effectiveness in his Kehillah? For that there's Chayim. For that there's the opposite. For that there's life.
Well, that's a nice thing. You give somebody a COVID, that's a very nice thing. You get a schar for it, you get reward for it. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about nuclear power. And you're talking about Pegiya Bichvod Rabbi or Kvod Rabbi, where you're talking about destroying the fabric of a Rav's relationship with his community or establishing and encouraging that fabric. You're talking about nuclear energy. It can be destructive with a chain effect, and it can be constructive with a chain effect. Who knows what consequences there can be because of a certain thing that you did, a certain COVID or whatever it is that you created around a particular individual, which made him more effective. Who knows what can be as a result of that. What I want to deal with next week is the more of the practical question, and that is, how does one do it? And more specifically, what does it mean? What is COVID? There are different kinds of COVID. There's real COVID, there's meaningful COVID, there's meaningless COVID, there's COVID which is just form, there's COVID which has substance to it. And how does one do it? You know, sometimes it doesn't mean only with your own Rav. It means also with another. There's a Rav in a community. Destroying his effectiveness is the same kind of Isur, and contributing to his effectiveness is the same kind of mitzvah. How do you do it? There might be a Rav in a community who you don't think is so fantastic, but still he has a job of work to do, so you have to be mechaved him. How do you mechaved him in a way that is genuine and that works and that increases his effectiveness? In other words, what we'll do next week is a little bit more of the mechanism of COVID, practical COVID, how one does it, how one doesn't do it, and how the effect of it really is seen and how the effect of it develops. We'll talk, you know, probably the week after or 2 weeks after, about the negative aspects of COVID, what the harms that COVID can cause in oneself, a need for COVID, inner leader of a community, how destructive it can be within himself. We'll examine it from its various facets. But as I say, next week we're just going to go into the obverse side of this coin, discussing the particular nature of the COVID which needs to be given to a man who's handling a community, whether it's your own community or it's another community, it makes no difference. How that COVID needs to be given and how that COVID needs to be handled.